On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I could say, well, how do you do? That's a translation of the Southern, well, howdy. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find the listen live button. That's where you'll find entree into the chat room, which you're welcome to join in. Nice little crowd forming up for this Friday on the front porch. Myth is there. Sergi's there. Tim's there. Jugger Punch is there. Jan's there. Sparky is on hand as ever. Hi, gang. Also, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the PayPal button, which is how we keep all of this going. We try to raise $150 a night. And we are pretty close to even, though not quite. And as a result, I was awfully tickled to get a quick Skype phone call from Max in Germany. No less, who is providing a challenge for this evening. Max writes, I listen from Germany and I can tell you that the Horn helps me explain the U.S. nonsense to my European friends here. They still cannot believe how stupid some Americans are. Please keep it up. And toward that end, Max has provided a $100 challenge for this evening. He's matching every contribution up to $100 this evening. So he's willing to turn your 10 into 20, your 20 into 40. And that will put us over the top for today's fundraising and take us a little way toward the remaining deficit. So thank you very much, Max. And thank you to everybody else who answers Max's challenge. Thank you. Thank you all, one and all, because that is the only way that this all keeps going. Plain and simple. It is a rainy night in Appalachia. I understand from pre-program conversations with Sergi that it is an icy day in Fort Worth. Weather's kind of topsy-turvy, I guess. Honest to God, our little gravel sidewalk out from the front porch of the mansion here, because it's Friday on the front porch, you might want to wear your waterproof waders or gaiters or whatever. It's underwater. No kidding. Everywhere you step here, it squishes. It's kind of like a 50-degree... Oh, yeah. Temperate rainforest. I forget sometimes. But really, it is pouring here, and at some point in time, it will turn into, oh, joy, ice. So probably after the program, there will be a quick run down to the Rippy Mart for a 5-gallon tank of gas in case fine coal-fired power lines of the Appalachian Electric Power Company begin, snapping like kite strings in high winds, because they do that. Civilization. But then on the other hand, you know, there are those beautiful days here when you go for a walk in the woods or down a trail and you think, you know, New York's got nothing on us. Or any other big city. But right now, no. Right now, the lights of the holiday season and everything, yeah, that'd be nice. But it's pouring. I mean, it is pouring. And looks to continue for a while. It. You see what happens here, just... little geology with Bob. What happens here is while the topsoils in these hills are relatively rich, they are very thin. it takes about 1,000 years to create what? A foot of topsoil? From leaf matter and, you know, stuff that rots and turns into... Yeah, it's one big... The Appalachian Mountains are one big self-composting system. And so previously, where the mountains have been left alone, what happens is the trees gather a certain amount of that water unto themselves. The soil soaks up another portion of the water. Some of it runs off into the little holler streams that form the capillaries of the greater streams that eventually feed into things like the Tennessee River and the Ohio and Monongahela. Yeah. But in those places where the mountains are gone, none of that, oddly enough, can happen. And so all that rain hits the mountaintop removal sites, runs off in these massive torrents, and leaves people who live below them doing things like my friend Maria told me today that she did, sat up until 4 o'clock in the morning waiting to see if a wall of floodwater was going to wash her and her family away. If the settlement ponds, sludge ponds, from a mountaintop removal site above her home happened to give way. It has been known to take place. See? Gosh, I hope it's nice where you are. Bundle up, Sergi. This too shall pass. It is Friday on the front porch, and we will be gathering together for our Friday night convocation here presently. Probably about a little, around an hour from now. And it has been a weirdly foreshortened week because of my having to take care of testing issues with Ferg, our proud new GED recipient. But hopefully we'll finish off the evening with some Jim Dandy good conversation. I saw something, so much of the Horn Family Commune follows a number of different progressive radio programs. I figured if you hadn't seen this already, this would be of some note to you. The hell, I've got a mute button. You didn't need to hear that. No, Brad Friedman reporting yesterday that the largest media market in the world, namely Los Angeles, California, as of January 1, midnight even, is going to be without any progressive broadcasting whatsoever as far as the publicly owned airwaves of the United States are concerned. KTLK 1150 AM will be flipped to become a right-wing vomitorium as of 12-00-00-01, January 1, 2014. Yes, where formerly you turned to 1150 a.m. in the L.A. area to hear something resembling progressive conversation, talk, now people tuning in to 1150 a.m. as of 12-00-00-01, January 1, 2014, we'll get to hear people like my friends with half my brain tied behind my back on and talent on loan from God, margin call. People like Flush Flimball or that life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity, or the Beckerhead. Hell, who knows, maybe they'll even run Alex Jones. The L.A. Times broke the story yesterday. Why is this all happening? Well, this is all happening because Clear Channel Communications owns KTLK, and Clear Channel Communications also owns Premier Radio Networks, who hustles the aforementioned Beckerhead life support system for a haircut and oxymoron. Both Clear Channel and Premier Radio Networks are, of course, owned by Bishop Willard Romney and Bain Capital. How about that? You got a bunch of progressive people living in the L.A. area. You got a bunch of progressive people that within the model for progressive radio could be brought to advertisers. And suddenly, Bishop Willard Romney, Bain Capital, Premier Radio Networks, and Clear Channel are no longer interested in making money from those progressive people. They would rather have a lost leader in 1150 KTLK, LA's right-wing vomitorium. By the way, San Francisco, you're going the same direction. KNEW 960 AM in San Francisco will be flipped as well. It will be totally right-wing putrescence, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So guess what? If you're listening to this program, I can say with some certitude, welcome to the future. You want progressive programming? You best tell your friends and neighbors to get over to the interweb tubes. I would take it as a personal favor if you would tell them that some of the finest conversation taking place on an audio-only format, such as radio, is taking place right here at the Horn. Mainly because I think it is. So, just a word of warning. But then again, Seattle and Portland got the axe last year, so they're just working their way down the coast. Eventually, it's all going to be right-wing. And progressive radio will be internet-based. And that's not a bad thing. You leave terrestrial airwaves and suddenly you don't have to shit kittens with crocheted tails if somebody calls in and refers to, say, Rick Santorum as a... pick your favorite epithet. I like the freedom that the interweb tubes provide. Asa pointing out from Vancouver, F them, Bob. Nobody's listening to terrestrial radio anyway, least of all KTLK. Most of us are listening to Progressive Voices, The Horn, etc. on our smartphones. I really think the future has already arrived. Genuinely. And if we can just keep the support going, we can keep this going. If we could ever figure out a way to consolidate all of these various tremendously talented people into one place that wasn't on the Air America model, we'd really have something, wouldn't we? And that's the kind of thing I sit around thinking about when I'm deep into weekend navel gazing, that kind of thing. So just a heads up, if you're in Southern California, wave bye-bye to KTLK. Don't bother complaining to Bain Capital. Remember, Bishop Willard owns it. And he thinks that you're just a bunch of useless eaters. A bunch of people out there mooching off the government who won't go out there and lift yourself up by your own bootstraps while he's trying to steal the boots out from under the straps. Food for thought. Food for thought, that's all. And, of course, as is to be expected, and this is no criticism, there has been much coverage all day long of the passing of Nelson Mandela. I think Charlie Pierce, nobody works better at the art of word knowing than Charlie Pierce does. And he had a piece early today in which he noted that Nelson Mandela's passing is the passing of a man who as incongruous as it may seem, exists on a continuum that stretches back to, of all people, Washington, Franklin, Adams, Jefferson, that bunch. And he explained it beautifully. So go and have a read. But not right now. There have been other tributes to Nelson Mandela. And, of course, the other side, those poor, poor people with great, big, giant lizard brains who are capable only of unmitigated hate, they've been having a field day. You may remember that Dr. John took one for the team yesterday evening, going over and checking out some of the initial responses at some of the right-wing sewers, places like that place that rhymes with light fart, and the swamp that is Freeperville. I don't know how this person ever got friended with me, but I unfriended them right quick on Facebook after they posted something earlier today that was just disgusting. This person's apparently a really nasty white supremacist and posted something about how Nelson Mandela was trying to eliminate all the white people in South Africa. How'd the white people get to South Africa, by the way? I'm just a bit curious. Because, see, I don't remember any attempt by the Zulus to colonize freaking Rotterdam. Just saying, you know. But there were also those who called to mind the words of Richard B. Dick Big Time Before He Dicks You Cheney in 1986, when he referred to Nelson Mandela as a terrorist. And, of course, he has stated repeatedly that he did not regret his words or what he said, and I should say Richard B. Dick Big Time Before He Dicks You Cheney and that decent human being's heart running in his chest. Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be a great, great morning when I get up and click on the interweb tubes and see the glory call, Dick! Glory! But then there's this. And I'm just gonna, because I did, and you might as well, there's no, it's like nasty medicine, only, well, no, this is just poison. You know who's just like Nelson Mandela? I'll tell you who's just like Nelson Mandela. Or, well, he says he's just like Nelson Mandela. Yeah. Oh, I scarcely have the will to do this to you, but I've already been through it, so congratulations. We're going to go through it together again. Because this occasioned me to run hooting around the room. Who is just like Nelson Mandela? Rick Santorum is just like Nelson Mandela. Just ask him, he'll tell you.
Points memo, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, considered a moderate, is leading the presidential pack among Republicans, according to recent analysis by the Real Clear Organization. Joining us now from Dallas, former presidential candidate Rick Santorum, now CEO of Echo Light Studios, a company that produces films for families of faith. So the Republic.
By the way, it's a miserable failure.
Coming together, I mean, you know, Governor Pence says, oh, we have to come together. There's an awful lot of sniping still going on.
Yeah, I, you know, there is a lot of sniping going on because, you know, we're in a party that, believe it or not, is the Big Ten party in America. We're the ones that have a lot of diversity and in our party.
I mean, there's this white guy and that white woman and, hey, look, there's that dude from South Carolina. Wow. Diversity. And don't forget 999 Hermie, or as Godzilla from Wasilla calls him, Herb.
Party as to
Herb Tarlick Kane.
the beliefs. And we don't, as Sarah said, it's not an unhealthy thing,
no.
Particularly at a time when you're out in the wilderness a little bit, not in power.
Philosophically, it's not, because you get better ideas when you have robust debate. However, when you're up against trying to get the Senate back and neutralizing a president that the Republican Party does not like, you got to really come together or you're not going to win. On that note, you don't disagree with that, right? You're going to have to come together next year, or you're not going to win.
Not at all. And look, there as Sarah talked, but there's some core principles that we can all get together with. I mean, when I ran for office and ran for president, you know, I traveled around. What people wanted is the same thing that you hear, which is.
Does that equate to when I got my ass handed to me repeatedly? Yeah, I thought it did.
Is they want limited government. They want they want someone who cares for those who are in trouble.
Okay.
Though I mean that's one of the weak spots, I think, of the Republicans.
But here's the problem:
we've not been particularly articulate on that front.
Here's the problem:
they've been plenty articulate on that front. Come on, they've explained time after time after time after time that they perceive that 47% of the people of the United States are useless eaters. They proved it by hacking away at the food stamp budget with a meat axe. What's left to explain?
There's common ground among Republicans. I'm an independent, but I know both parties pretty well.
Yeah, you're an independent. You're an independent, and I'm the czar of all the Russias, Bill. Come on.
However, the media Republicans, very conservative talk radio people, are very ideological. And they're just ripping up people like John McCain, rhinos, every day, banging, just killing them. And that filters into...
Poor Bill. Can he go through a day without using eliminationist rhetoric? Really? Somebody's killing Grandpa McCain? It's going to get better, though. Or worse, depending on your perspective.
The folks and the people who vote Republican. And let me give you an example. Ideology has to really leave the building next year and in 2016, or you're going to have President Hillary Clinton. Nelson Mandela...
So he says, F that whole voting business, right? I mean, it's just going to be a coronation. Nobody out there would dare to chat. Now, we're not going to have a primary in it. No, hell no.
Ella just died. I don't know whether you're aware, but...
Wait, stop. I got to back it up. I kind of talked over that one. I apologize. This is where it gets precious. This is one of those I wait all night for calls like these moments.
Just killing them. And that filters into the folks and the people who vote Republican. And let me give you an example. Ideology has to really leave the building next year and in 2016, or you're going to have President Hillary Clinton. Nelson Mandela just died. I don't know whether you're aware, but 95 years old.
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela, I spent some time in South Africa. He was a communist, this man.
Yeah.
He was a communist, all right? But he was a great man.
Where do you begin? He was a communist. But he was a great man. Is that surprising? Is it impossible to be a great man and a communist? Hey, Bill, Eugene Victor Debs was a socialist. Dude was greater than you will ever be in your entire stinking, miserable, overfed, overpaid, overprivileged existence. You know, everything is the Harlem restaurant to Bill O'Reilly. Well, it was a restaurant. It was run by black people in Harlem, but the food was good. It was great food. He was a communist, but he was a great man. But if you think the stupidity, the rank, outright, unmitigated, unflyblown, unblushing stupidity of Bill O'Reilly is precious, you ain't heard nothing yet.
What he did for his people was stunning. The sacrifices that he made. He could have repudiated and got out of that prison. He wouldn't do it. He was a great man. But he was a communist. So, but I would never attack Nelson Mandela. I mean, I told...
Except to say repeatedly, he was a communist! Okay, as our buddy Ron in Raleigh used to periodically point out, and still does from time to time, topics you will never hear on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. Things like, why do leaders of popular movements for freedom and self-determination wind up being of political persuasions contrary to that those preferred positions of the American political elite? Why does that happen? How is it that Fidel Castro winds up a communist? How is it that, you know, if it's true? Because there was nowhere else to go in a binary systemic world of the Cold War. Commie, capitalist. Capitalist, commie. Communist, running dog of imperialism. Communist, you get the idea. These are defaults. O'Reilly and the nonagenarian audience to which he speaks, they don't do nuance.
Chip Tutu, I disagree with you and with Mr. Mandela, because Tutu's that way as well, but I respect you. So why can't you guys in the Republican Party bring that to the fore?
Okay. I think he still hasn't blinked, but BroFromix is about to answer Falafel Bill's question. Loofah Man. He's about to answer his question, and at this point in time, because I like to think of myself as a kind and caring friend, I suggest that you get the duct tape and tennis balls that you keep handy for this time of the evening, Monday through Friday. Go ahead and apply them, because otherwise you're going to be barking at the moon or the setting sun or the rising sun, depending on where you are, in very short order.
Well, Nelson Mandela stood up against a great injustice and was willing to pay a huge price for that, and that's the reason he's mourned today, because of that struggle that he performed. But you're right. I mean, what he was advocating for was not necessarily the right answer, but he was fighting against some great injustice. And I would make the argument that, you know, we have a great injustice going on right now in this country with an ever increasing size of government that is taking over and controlling people's lives, and Obamacare is front and center in that. And I agree with talking points, your points earlier, which is the center focus of the 2014 election must be Obamacare and all of its aspects. And the cool thing about Obamacare is it's not only bad for the economy, bad for people's health. It's also bad for freedom of conscience. It's also bad on a whole variety of issues that will energize all
well,
across
right
America.
Right now, the folks
so
are feel the way that you
got that. Sometimes with these clips, I feel a little bit a little bit like Odysseus. Everybody else has to stop their ears up with wax and just keep rowing past the sirens, but Odysseus says, "Strap me to the mast. I want to hear this." And just goes screaming past them. Because I really get rendered something approaching speechless to hear anybody who expects anyone to take them seriously say that apartheid, no, back up, let's frame this differently, that the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is the same thing as apartheid. We can take a couple of minutes here just to let that get all the way down past the subdermal layers and working its way clean toward the bone. Rick Santorum, fetus frightener, has just announced to the American people, or what portion of the American people watches and takes seriously Bill O'Reilly, think that people having to purchase insurance, and if they don't make enough money, being eligible in some states, some non-Plessy states in the United States, for Medicaid, is the same thing as a system of four-tiered government that completely disenfranchised anybody darker than Johnny and Edgar Winter. And Texas Betsy points out, wait a minute, these same Republican guys liked apartheid. Remember St. Ronnie vetoing divestment? Yeah, that was one of those votes that Richard B. Dick big time before he dicked you Cheney. And that poor innocent human being's heart wandering around fugitively in his chest. Yeah, he voted against divestment. And then when they hammered out a compromise and came back and got a veto-proof majority, there stood Richard B. Dick, Richard B. Dick big time before he dicks you five deferments Cheney to cast another no vote on the divestment compromise bill. Howdy. How? And I've asked from time to time, how? Does one carry on, or even hope to carry on, or attempt to carry on, a sane conversation with someone like these two? Like a guy who feels like his rights to keep contraception out of the hands of women who don't subscribe to his weird, twisted, 11th century CE view of women trump the rights of the women themselves to have constitutional rights. See? Little forest animal noises. Jumping Jehoshaphat. Back her up, Bob.
You do, but that could change. If Obamacare kicks in and people are getting better health care and at a less expensive price, things could change.
Well, Bill, you know that's not going to happen. Well, they're already telling us.
I don't
us
know.
The prices
I mean, I said
up.
75%, it's not going to happen. But there is a 25% chance that it might. Now, you're a movie mogul now. You're running a movie company and you got a film out now.
It's a miserable failure. The movie company's a miserable failure. It's all just another grift, another bit of graft, another bit of hustle and con to put money into Rick Santorum's pockets because he's never worked an honest day in his life. He's been sucking at the public teat for as long... Well, never mind. There he is. America's heir apparent, self-appointed, to the legacy of Nelson Mandela. Rick Brofromix Santorum. By the way, I was informed the other day, I think on Facebook, that his Santorum problem on Google has disappeared. No longer do you get the Dan Savage definition of Santorum if you look him up. Which is a pity, because he is still that walking definition. Shh. Jesus. Yeah. Irish Dave, damn it, Bob, darn it, Bob, trick question. I said the talking Pope Francis was the answer to the query of who is just like Mandela. Let's see, that's yeah. Jack in Shreveport, O'Reilly, Mandela, and the pig. Let's see, the O'Reilly clip was from last night, right? Right. Well, I heard the pig man on the AM radio, you know, America's truth detector, the oxymoron, Flush Flimball, already complaining that the media, my friends, the liberal media, had spent too much time on Nelson Mandela. And yeah, says Jack, the right wing really respected Nelson Mandela. No, it's not the man on dog part that's disappeared from Google. It is the definition of Santorum as being a certain frothy mixture. Thanks, Sal. Sal has jumped in to answer the call, and so $10 of the challenge that Max put forward earlier this evening has been met. That means just 9 more folks at $10 apiece, and that challenge will be completed. Oh, and this from Robert in Australia: a little good news from Australia. Marriage equality laws came into effect today in the Australian Capital Territory. That would be Canberra. The Australian Capital Territory is a tiny little territory in the middle of New South Wales where Canberra resides. Robert says, let the dominoes fall. How about that? Freedom. As we remember the struggle for freedom of Nelson Mandela. Sometimes the goddess of irony is downright benign, sweet even. Yeah. Oh, just a gentle reminder. Jim mentioning Count Dicula. Do remember that when asked about his heart transplant, Richard B. Dick Big Time Before He Dicks You 5 Deferments Cheney Duck said, well, it's not somebody's old heart, it's my new heart. Stay classy, Count Dicula. Stay classy. Jim with a question. You don't know what we're talking about with the duct tape and the tennis balls, Jim? Yeah, that's something that's so outrageous, so annoying, so hateful, that you just kind of have to stick a tennis ball in your mouth, run a little duct tape around, duct tape your arms to the chairs, and sit there and until it's over with. Betsy notes, I taught my advisory and study skills classes today about Nelson Mandela. Brand new topic to everyone, except the one girl who is from Africa. Well, teachable moment, right? Right. Oh, by the way, let's see. Yeah, we did that. Oh, by the way, for the second time now, health officials in Hong Kong, according to Agence France-Presse, have confirmed a human case of H7N9 bird flu. This one is an 80-year-old man. Luing Ting Hung said, tonight we have confirmed the second human case of avian flu influenza AH7N9. We believe this is an imported case. He is said to be stable. And in an effort to quell public panic, the official said, we are still investigating if the patient had exposure to poultry, but he definitely did not in Hong Kong. And continuing in an attempt to be reassuring, said, there is no evidence that this virus can cause sustained human-to-human transmission, so the risk of widespread or community-wide outbreak is low. We expect sporadic cases of human avian influenza H7N9 to occur from time to time as the temperature falls at this time of year. So they got it direct from the bird, but not in Hong Kong. Because chickens or ducks or whatever, geese that are scurry in Hong Kong would never be so low as to hobnob around with other poultry that, you know, has that. And just because it's good to keep an eye out for all the various and sundry assholes, which we can say because this is the internet out there, we go to Pickens County, South Carolina, Stan. We go to Pickens County, South Carolina, Stan, because that one in their White House asked that flags be lowered to half-mast in honor of the passing of Nelson Mandela. Enter Rick Clark, the sheriff of Pickens County, South Carolina, Stan, who said on his Facebook page, I usually don't post political items, but today is different. I received this notification today as a mark of respect for the memory of Nelson Mandela. The president orders that the flag of the United States be flown at the half staff, effective immediately until sunset, December 9th, 2013. High Sheriff Rick Clark then continued, Nelson Mandela did great things for his country and was a brave man, but he was not an American. The flag should be lowered at our embassy in South Africa, but not here. Or maybe, and you know he was thinking this, maybe in Kenya. Now, there in Pickens County, South Carolina, Stan, the flag at the sheriff's office were at half staff on Friday, and Clark said it would remain that way on Saturday to mark Pearl Harbor Day. But come Sunday, I'm ordering that the flag here at my office go back up. Because Nelson Mandela weren't no American. Yeah, like Mr. Teabagger, you are. Trenchant question, Irish Dave. Is Clark's Christian name really Rick, or is he more of a dick? Hey, thank you very much, Asa. Asa has met another $50 worth of the challenge issued by Max in Germany this evening, so we are at $60, only $40 to go to meet that challenge. Thank you very, very much, Asa. Dr. John with an observation regarding internet broadcasting. I was listening in my car via Bluetooth and a smartphone driving through the wilds of icy upstate New York. There's a lot of privilege there, but less than just a few years ago. And you sounded great. The future. It's near. It might even be here. We've been fooling around, playing around in the future here at the Horn for 8 years now. 10 if you count the little terrestrial experiment, because we streamed that too. God, somewhere I've got a bunch of old air checks from those earliest days. One of these days I need to find those and figure out some way to reduce them to digital form. They're fun. Real fun. And I heard Malloy mention, what, a couple of three nights ago, that here in a couple of model years, cars won't even come with radios in them. They'll just come with smartphone jacks, because radios will have become, well, I mean, it's like putting a buggy whip holder in your car. So go ahead, Clear Channel, Bain Capital, Bishop Willard Romney, go ahead, own the airwaves. We'll just keep plugging away over here, working on owning the future. Right? Yeah. They weren't no American. By the way, Sheriff Rick from South Carolina, Stan, I presume didn't have a problem flying the flag at half-mast in 2005 when that right-wing reactionary Pope John Paul II shuffled off this mortal coil and flags were ordered. Well, of course not. The jackass. Remember the Jackassed Society. It is almost it's almost too much when you start the program with Bro Fromix comparing himself to Nelson Mandela and apartheid to Obamacare. I don't want to get all Seinfeld, but how stupid is that? I mean, I come back to it, it's... And yet there is nobody in the world who will look a Rick Santorum directly in the eye and say, "Do you realize, sir, that you're an idiot?" I mean, four square. Restaurant grade. Museum quality. Idiot. Because, you know, we maintain this pretense of civility. So let's take us a little break and hopefully gather together the Skype group. And, of course, you're welcome to jump in on the phone lines as well, 304-658-3333. Tweet came in from Sandra a little bit ago. Santorum comparing Obamacare to apartheid is interesting, since many thugs supported apartheid. That means they, yeah, wow. How about that? Doesn't that mean they should support the Affordable Care? Yep. And one last thing, and this is not something I'm proud of, or happy to say, I should put. I sat down last night. I figured I'd waited and, you know, hopefully things simmered down with the site and everything. I sat down and started marching my way through the healthcare.gov application process. Now, I hear that in places like California and Kentucky, their state-run systems are just working, spinning like a top. And let's understand that I fully support the Medicaid expansion portion of the Affordable Care Act. Not so crazy about forcing people to buy insurance, but those 40 million or so human beings, what is it, 45,000? There's 40 million uninsured, and 45,000 people die every year in this country simply for lack of access to health insurance. Not lack of access to health care, lack of access to health insurance. So if we could cut that number down to something approaching zero, that would be really cool. That would be wonderful. Imagine all the happy, non-grieving people that there would be. But I started through the process, the online application process, and I joke about being bad at math on the fly and things like that. But I'm pretty competent in a fairly broad spectrum of stuff. I'm pretty competent at getting through forms on the internet. And I can tell you truly that that website, and maybe I won't get the White House Christmas card this year because of what I'm about to say. Then again, I didn't get it last year, or the year before that, or the year before that, or the year before that. That website's a disaster. And it doesn't seem to be getting any better. And that gives me no cheer to report. I'd tried it several other times, but I would get to that point where it would time out, and oh well. But in this instance, it was not the failure. It wasn't the failure of the site to handle the traffic. It was the actual design of the questionnaire itself. For instance, my son Ferg shares my name. Only he is the second, not junior, but the second. I got to the point where I was filling out his information, and there was a drop-down menu where he could be senior, junior, the third, or the fourth. Roman numerals, mind you, III and IV, but not the second. And Agnes and I had a reason for naming him the second and not junior. I mean, if it had been up to me, I would have followed the old Roman tradition and made him the younger. But we made him the second. Well, whoever the genius was that laid out that website application process never conceived. I mean, is my son the only II Roman numeral II second in America? Are there only a couple of us so that nobody would ever think that if you're going to have Roman numeral 3 and Roman numeral 4, you might want to have Roman numeral 2? Because, after all, the question is, how does his name actually appear on his Social Security card? And there was no way for me to input what his name is properly, as it appears on his Social Security card. And I went through this process no less than 4 times before I gave up in despair. I'll try to do it on the phone over the weekend, maybe, or Monday, maybe. I don't know. But, well, okay, thank you, Texas Betsy. No, my friend Marco V had the same one enrolling Marco V the second. V. Okay. My friend Marco V had the same one, enrolling Marco V the second. It ain't there. There's no the second there. And if you try some other sort of a fix, you wind up having twice as many children as you actually have. It was like something out of Dr. Seuss. Remember the Cat in the Hat, Thing 1 and Thing 2? I had Ferg 1 and Ferg 2. And then they wanted to know who his step-parent was, because I hadn't listed him as... Oh! And by the end of my fourth failed attempt, and let's please remember that the definition of paranoia is not that other people are out to get you. The definition of paranoia is the irrational fear that other people are getting out to get you. And knowing, as we know, the amount of absolute hatred, just blood boiling, gut stirring, toenail curling hatred that the right wing has for the Affordable Care Act, and knowing that right wing defense contractor, who were the same people that couldn't hang on to our national security secrets and let a contractor slip away with them. Booz Allen Hamilton. Yeah, they got a shitload of money to produce that god-awful screwed-up website. Or some of the production of it. Let us also remember that upon leaving office, the Bush administration more or less admitted that they had left countless moles, sleeper cells, if you will, inside the government, to make sure that even though Count Dicula and George the Dimmer were gone, their evil ways would not be. I agree, Texas Betsy. Me and Agnes do not, she says, you and Agnes do not need any more children. No, especially not the ones that are spontaneously created on a government form. This thing is ridiculous. It is silly. Some of it seems fairly straightforward. What's your name? What's your ethnicity? Do you plan to file a tax return? Do you live at this address? And then once you get into the dependence part of it, it all falls apart. And if you finally hit the, you know, submit button, you start getting red error codes telling you to go back and fix things. And you go try to go back and fix things, and you find out that they are unfixable. Because, for instance, some not government employee, not some person who is oath sworn to defend and uphold the Constitution, but some independent contractor whose only obligation is to his employer and whether or not they get a goddamn paycheck every week. See above, Booz Allen Hamilton. See Edward Snowden. They screwed this up. The private sector, the sacred capitalist free market private sector screwed this up. Was there not one other country on earth whose application website we could have, you know, just kind of taken a peek at? Oh no, because that wouldn't be American exceptionalism, now would it? We've got to have an exceptionally fucked up website. So, because he was never appointed, and I'm willing to periodically stand in as the secretary of what the... Jesus, Barack! Without portfolio... Jesus, Barack! But maybe it's not even a Jesus, Barack thing. Yeah, see, Irish... Yeah, Irish Day has it. Impossible! The privates can do no wrong. Yeah, for those sleeper cells, Irish Dave reminds me the precise term in the intelligence community is stay behinds. Oh, how about that? Dr. John notes, I'm also the second Roman numeral 2. Well, you're going to have a lovely time if you haven't already trying to sign on to that thing, because that Roman numeral 2 doesn't exist, Dr. John. But Dr. John asks, isn't the issue with the healthcare.gov site largely a result of farming out the setup to private contractors because we're not allowed to let actual public employees make things in the public interest? This came through before I said what I said. You should blame, among others, Booz Allen Hamilton, I think. Precisely. And just by way of fleshing this out, I got a press release the other day from the folks over at the American Federation of Government Employees. I had a nice little exchange with the person who wrote the press release, because the title of it is Largest Union President Expresses Outrage Over Increase in Contractor Compensation Cap. It's a mouthful. But of course, me being me, I wrote back and said, listen, some right-wing gas bag's going to see that and have a fit. And I'm not going to have a fit. And he wrote back and said, you know what? One of the folks over there in our legislative department just said that there was a better way for me to put that than largest union president. And I said, you know what, like William Howard Taft? But anyway, the president of the largest union has expressed outrage over this. His name is J. David Cox, Sr., and 2 days ago, wanted the world to understand that he was well and truly pissed right off that the Office of Management and Budget has announced a new cap increase on annual compensation paid to contractor employees. And this is per employee, by the way. Now, remember, as background to all of this, we have gutted the civil service. The people who actually make this government run were hung out to dry for how many weeks during the sequester? Forced to work, you know, pushed into situations of what can only be described as involuntary servitude. A massive portion of the unemployment in this country comes from government employees, civil servants, who have been shoved out into the damn cold because repiglickens despise the very idea of government if the government servants are not serving them directly. So you got all these people who have been shoved out of government service, and lo and behold, the annual compensation cap for an employee contractor has been run up from $862,000 per year, which is pretty damn sweet, to $952,000 per year, $48,000 short of $1 million per year. How many? And I know, you know, people like Jim, people like our buddy Philip, and a number of other folks have experience in the federal government service. How many civil service jobs are there that pay $952,000 a year? How many $500,000 a year jobs are there? How many? 250,000. Yeah, I know, Texas Betsy. But, Bob, they work hard. Yeah, I know. They certainly were busting ass when Eddie Snowden slipped out the door with the, you know. Right. Sleep tight tonight, America. Your contractors are awake. But really, J. David Cox pointed out, Federal civilian employees have had their pay frozen for 3 straight years and incurred a week of lost wages this summer due to sequestration furloughs. Meanwhile, the Budget Conference Committee reportedly is considering cutting federal employee compensation even further by requiring employees to contribute an additional 1.2% of their salaries toward a retirement system that is already fully funded. At the same time, some in Congress are advocating an array of substantial compensation cuts for modestly paid VA nurses and Border Patrol agents. Wealthy contractors are getting a fat pay raise on the taxpayer's dime. $190,000 in 1 year. J. David Cox said, it is the height of irresponsible governing and leadership to allow this ridiculous increase in taxpayer-funded compensation for contractor executives. How, he asks, can the president have allowed this to happen on the same day he spoke against income inequality in the nation's heartland? Why is the administration enriching the top 1% of the nation's contractors, but calling for cuts in compensation to the working and middle-class Americans who make up the federal workforce? Administration officials could have demanded a much lower cap on contractor compensation in the budget, but they didn't. And I for one would like to, oh, thank you, Texas Betsy, same whiny voice. But that's putting debt upon our grandchildren. She asks, did the contractors write the budget? Over at OMB, God knows. By the way, the position of the American Federation of Government Employees is that the contractor annual cap should be lowered to the salary of the Vice President of the United States, currently $230,700. If that was to happen, and if we just take into account the Department of Defense, the cost savings would be, no kidding, $440 million per year. And that's just the Defense Department. Yeah. How many people had this story out there? I'm lucky I got to it this evening. Oddly enough, you don't hear the teabaggers out there hooting and hollering. Well, hell no! That's America. That's America, land of the free and home of the contractors. Okay, all right. Going back to the Affordable Care Act website, Robert in Australia says, we have a website here in Oz called iSelect. Its purpose is to allow you to find the best price for health insurance, car insurance, home loans, electricity, and broadband. Robert says, and it's been around for years. I presume, Robert, that you're also saying that it works nearly flawlessly. Jeebus. So, there you go. Them teabaggers and them are pig lickings. They hate them some government waste, but how wasteful is this? But it's not actually. See, ultimately, and this is something that really got into full swing with the Bush administration, the ultimate goal of the right wing in this country is to completely eliminate government service altogether and make it an Ayn Randian free market free-for-all. And what a joyful time that will be. I sure wish this story would get, because, I mean, isn't that the kind of story that used to get outrage coverage on 60 Minutes? Oh, I guess that wouldn't bother Laura Logan so much. God knows, over on Radio Rwanda, they won't be sending John Stossel and his porn stash out to dress up like a homeless government worker to point out no. You know, Betsy, I'm not going to run out and bet on it. She says, you know, my rabbi was at the White House Hanukkah party held yesterday after Hanukkah ended. So if you say nice things, maybe Barack will invite you to the December 27th Christmas party. I've said a lot of nice things. But, oh, my God. Speaking of Hanukkah, did you catch the church bulletin board that simply said, hey, Christmas is easier to say than Hanukkah? The love that passeth all understanding. Break time. It's 11 minutes past the hour. We are ever so close to finishing off Max's challenge from Germany this evening. We're about $40 away. So if you could help that, if you could help with that, it would sure be wonderful. Coming up Friday on the front porch. Okay, Christmas is not easier to say in Hebrew than Hanukkah. I don't even want to know. I can't even read right to left. English, I can't read right to left. I get confused by that backwards ambulance that's written on the front of ambulance, even in my rearview mirror. So let's take a break. This is Conversation Radio, listener supported. It's Friday on the front porch. If you're headed this way for the front porch, do please bring your raincoat with you. It is, as we say, a mite damp outside. I'm Bob Kincaid. classic by Peter Gabriel. Biko. With the passing of Nelson Mandela, I went back just to try to read a little bit of the history, just to understand the brutality. And you can't understand it. Just to inform myself of the brutality. And the story of Steve Biko is, oh God, miserable. Oh my God, is it our buddy Horst popping into the chat room? Jump over into the Skype, Horst. Okay, so there's the question, Duncan. What's the Skype ID? I'm going to go ahead and bring Duncan up here. Myth in the chat room says, what's the Skype ID?
You ready?
Well, no, I mean, I'm here. We're all here, but Myth.
Oh, okay. It's just my chat room name, Sparky Dunk. You just search out Sparky Dunk, send me your contact information.
Okay, so Sparky Dunk on chat, Sparkydunc, and bang, there you are.
Just search that in Skype and send me a contact request or
awesome
friend request.
Okay. Well, okay. Horst can't come in and come out and play, but he's got things to do. He's on the other side of the planet and everything. Well, just the same. Hey, Horst. Good to see you, and thanks for helping out at the beginning of the week. The hole was there, and your anticipation was much appreciated. And again, just a reminder, we're only $40 away from finishing up with Max's challenge for this Friday as we head into the weekend. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. And let's do get Friday on the front porch rolling. Skype group roll call thus far. Duncan, you there, Sergi? Oh, Sergi.
Oh, he had to go get a sandwich or something.
Oh, one of those donut burgers? Okay.
And, yeah, something.
Yeah, and Jay Cruzan is with us. Hey, Jay Cruzan.
Hey, Bob. How you doing? I'm here.
Are you working late again?
No. I'm home.
Oh, I'm here.
Thank you. Oh, there's Sergi. Got your donut burger?
Yeah, if I'm set for food right now and... Oof, it is a mess out there.
Yeah, that's so weird. You're covered up in icicles and ice, and I'm sitting here in a swamp. Actually, the swamp's the next room over, but who am I kidding? Go ahead.
Oh, sorry for interrupting. It's some crazy stuff out there. Like, basically what happened is, and I'll just give a quick rundown. You know, last night, it started, you know, raining. Then the temperature slipped below freezing, and it became freezing rain. And that put a nice layer of ice on everything. And then it just sleeted several inches on top of
that. And the entire Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex went skating on the interstate.
It's chaos out there. I have so much pictures and video and such, and I'm going to be posting those on YouTube and Facebook later. And it's some crazy stuff. Like, I was just, walked up for part of my food, and it is like, I've noticed people are being careful, so people are, you know, using caution on the roads and such. So it's not as bad as past winter storms I've seen.
It's early December. I wouldn't say it's not the worst of it, because, you know, remember, we're living in the era of climate change, Sergi, and it's just bringing so many new and interesting changes, that climate change.
Down here, the weather's getting more extreme on both ends. Our winters are getting colder, and our summers are getting hotter. 2011 seems to be the year it kicked it off. In the same year, I saw 2 above zero and 118.
It's just going to get more and more interesting. What's the curse? May you live in interesting times. All right, let's bring some folks on to the Skype line. Okay, we got the Skype group in. By the way, Jug-a-Punch is in as well. and here comes Myth. Cool. Let's check out what's happening on the traditional old telephone lines. Hey, who have I got?
Hello.
Hello.
Kathy.
Oh, hey, Kathy.
Howdy.
I'm so glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here, too.
All right, we're going to keep things rolling, find out who's where. Hey, who have I got here?
Hello?
Well, hello, Edward.
Yes. Do you know there is a movie? I saw it on my advertisement here. I have the dish. There is a movie called Wolverine.
Oh, dear God. Well, you know the line that I use comes from that god-awful movie Red Dawn from the 1980s where...
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a new movie, and the title is Wolverine.
Oh, be joyful. Yeah, the Marvel Comics hero with the things that come out of the blades with that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like Edward Not Scissor Hands.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, and I worked in Edward, too.
Hey, how about that? Well, you know, here in Dallas tonight, it's supposed to be 9 degrees, single digits. And I called all my friends and told them about it, and they were going, oh, really? What should I do? I said, get your faucets dripping, you idiots.
Oh, yeah, you'll be able to hear them popping all over the Metroplex, won't
you're
you?
Telling me. Yeah.
And I can't think of one thing that I would rather not do. Okay, well, yeah, I can't rewire my house.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, sweat and copper, what a joy that is.
Mm. And in fact, we have two friends, Sally and Molly. In the summertime, they spend the summer in Anchorage, Alaska. But then in the winter, they come to Dallas. And I called them and told them to get their faucets dripping. And they said a friend of theirs just called them from Anchorage and told them that Anchorage was warmer than Dallas.
Not at all surprised. Okay, let's see who else is on the lines here. Hey, who have I got? Hello?
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 Are you there?
I'm there, Jim. Okay, so so far we have Edward and Jim and Kathy. And one more to bring aboard. And I think the audio weirdness will calm down in a second. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Oh, it's Bill. Okay. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hello.
Woof, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Good evening.
Woof, woof, woof.
Yes, and yeah, hello to White Fang back there in the background.
Oh,
hey,
dear.
You won't believe what just walked past my house.
Oh, and Texas Betsy says, thank you, Edward, for the reminder about dripping faucets. Is it going to get that cold down in Austin, too?
I don't know, but here in Dallas, they say we're going to have single digits tonight. So get them dripping, folks, unless you want a mess tomorrow. I had some friends way back in 1978. We had this horrible storm here, ice storm, and all of their pipes broke and everything and ruined their house and the whole thing, and they were without power for 2 weeks. It's not that bad yet. We still have, the last I heard, 200,000 without power.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
What's the deal with all the pipes?
When we do it up here in Dallas, we do it real good.
Was that you, Jay Cruisin'?
Yeah, I was wondering what's the deal with all the pipes breaking. You don't have any insulation in your floors or what?
No.
This is Texas, Jason. What do you think?
insulate to keep the AC in.
Well,
we don't prepare for cold. This is Texas.
People don't do that here in Texas because it's warm in the winter. 3 days ago, it was 80 degrees.
Yeah, Texas Betsy just pointed out in the chat room, we have no insulation in anything.
No, absolutely not. We put insulation in our house up in the attic and everything. But we're still letting our faucets drip.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Mm.
I went to Home Depot the other day and got heat trace tape.
What kind?
Heat tape to put on my pipes.
Oh, well, yeah. I didn't know that.
I used tie wraps to put it on the pipes.
And then it just plugs in at the other end, is that it?
Yeah, it just plugs in. I had a plug right above where our well is, so I just made a cord to come down and
Can you use that with like PVC?
Yes.
Okay. You know, one of the problems here that we have is that back in the 80s, when this place was replumbed, they came out with what they thought was this fabulous new flexible plastic plumbing pipe. It's kind of gray, and it's awful.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're using a different brand now, but they're...
Yeah, well, all of this stuff's going to come out, and we're putting nice... And we will. We'll you know that they've got circular split foam insulation that you can put around your pipes. But still, Edward's absolutely right. In brutal weather like this, drip them.
That's right.
Used to use electric.
Even in Ohio, sometimes we have to drip them
and keep the thing from freezing. With at the downspout, you know, you can keep that open.
Yeah, indeed.
Yes. Yesterday on my drive to Chico, I go past orchard after orchard and nut trees, and they all have drip systems on them. Well, the water that drips out, it just builds like little ice crystal, like creeping from every little spout everywhere in the orchards. It was just these little ice castles on the ground.
And you saw, yeah, I mean, and I love that picture of the 19th century stone walls.
Oh, those are all over Butte County. If you look close at them, you'll notice that there's a barbed wire fence on the inside of the stone walls. That's to keep the cattle away from the stone wall. Because most of those fields like that, they put cattle on when it's green in the spring and certain times of the year.
Built by Asian immigrants, right?
Correct.
Wow. Oh, and hey, big thank you going out to Robert, who just kicked in $10 to push us up to $170, $30 away from fully meeting Max's challenge from Germany this evening. Thank you very much, Robert. Dr. John noting, he says, I grew up in Southeast Texas and I'm now living in upstate New York. He said, it routinely gets to zero here, zero Fahrenheit. The first winter, I was talking to my neighbor after our first hard freeze. He asked how we got through it, and I said, well, I set all my faucets dripping, so things are fine. He sort of stared at me and said, why in the world would you do that? Look in your basement and then imagine where the ground level is. So I did it and realized the water pipe enters the house 5 feet underground. Natural insulation. Isn't that neat how that works?
Yep.
Oh, my.
Yeah, Wichita Falls is low, just north here. It's going to be zero tonight.
My cheating was done with a, inside the lower heater hole, if you have a device to plug into the wall, and the heat, of course, would rise. And that car would think it was 55 degrees when it hadn't, you know, it hadn't run in a week and it was zero, you know. to keep the metal from self-destructing when you start a cold car like that.
Well, folks, I'm going to have to leave you because I'm sort of under the weather because I spent yesterday in the dentist chair, but my teeth are so pretty now, every time I pass the mirror, I have to stop and grin at myself.
Absolutely. Have a good look at the pearlies. All right, Edward, you have yourself a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and thanks for calling in with your... with the helpful housekeeping tip for uninsulated Texans.
How about it? How about it? Take care.
You too. Bye now. I tell you what, Edward is truly, truly something. Let's see now. That opens up a spot. Let me bring somebody else on. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Is that me?
That's you, Kevin.
Yeah, I didn't hear the normal buzz or whatever when you brought me onto the lawn. Just came on.
Oh, please, Jesus, don't let another expensive piece of equipment be going down the... please, okay. Now that
well, you sounded all right in that, but I just didn't hear the normal buzz. But it sounded great. You know, the voice sounds great in that, so...
And we can
anyway,
hear you.
Hello, Miss Kathy.
No, that was Kathy, not Cassie.
Oh, Kathy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hello, Miss Kathy. I'm just glad to hear a female voice on these conversations.
Well, I apologize. I had to mute. Those were my puppies.
Oh, that was okay. Okay. What kind of ferocious critter is that?
Two of them. One's a border beagle mix, so he's fat, but he outsmarts me. And the other is a just mutt terrier, small black dog. She's real sweet. She came up and ended up on our porch step. On our back porch, neighbor brought her and said she had been behind his garage all day in a month of February and said, "Is this your dog?" Well, he knew darn right it wasn't Odie. But he was going away for the weekend and said he'd have to take her to the pound. So I said, "Oh, no, we'll keep her." And tried to find her owner and couldn't find it. So she's ours.
Yeah, I love dogs. I got a similar story. I was adopted by a Basset Springer Spaniel mix.
Oh, cute.
Just showed up on the porch one day. Never could find who owned it. Still got him to this day.
That's the way Madison is. And Madison actually is named after the striking workers in Madison, Wisconsin, because that's when we found her, or got her.
Oh, how cool.
So, yeah. So she was named for them. So they're sweet, but when I said hello to Bill, I said, "Hi, Bill," kind of loud, and they thought somebody was at the door.
Oh.
They started barking, yeah.
That's a job.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, sometimes. And also, they were crunching bones, so I put it on mute. Come on.
Well, and we've got, Kathy, you're new to the Friday on the Front Porch group, and we've got another individual new to the Friday on the Front Porch. Myth, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool. Welcome aboard.
No, thank you.
Chime in anytime. And I mean, this is, you know, you can tune in. Jesus, how old am I? But you can select whatever channel you wish and frequently see these round tables of overfed experts on. My God, I think tonight. Speaking of reasons to put straws in tequila bottles, tonight the fine folks over at Chicken Noodle News are having S.E. Cup sit in for Piers Morgan to interview the Beckerhead for an hour.
Are you serious?
I wish I was lying. And what's funny? I mean,
what time does that start?
If I knew, I wouldn't tell you.
After Bob.
I may have to watch that.
Yeah, if I wanted to laugh, I'd turn it into Comedy Central.
You got a point.
Right.
Exactly. And the funny thing is that SE Cup actually works for the Beckerhead.
Oh, what? She does?
Yeah, at the Blaze.
I thought she was working on that point counterpoint kind of show.
Oh no, she also works on the new zombie version of Crossfire, which I have mercifully yet to see.
Me either.
But the thing is, she also gets a paycheck from Glenn Beck. So any idea of journalistic ethics, goodbye now, goodbye, don't come back now. Yeah, it's all over.
So can I ask a question? S.E. Cup, is that actually some kind of name, or is that just some type of reference to...
Yeah, her... No, her
Fox boobs or whatever?
No, sadly, it's...
It doesn't bring an image to your mind when you hear the name?
Well, yeah, of course it does, and that's why I just was wondering...
Her name's like Sarah Eviscerati Cup or Elizabeth Cup or something, but it's C-U-P-P, and she wears nerd glasses, and she calls herself a conservative atheist, but she wrote this book called The Liberal War Against Christmas or Christians, or I forget who we're at war. Anybody know who we're at war with these days? I mean, I lost track with you.
It's Sarah Elizabeth.
Okay.
And I knew it's it was C-U-P-E.
Yep. Yeah, I lost track of who we're at war with back around Arbor Day or something.
I call her Sippy Cup.
Very nice, Sergi.
Good. You know that there are much more less important things than the war on Christmas. We have all these non-existent problems that we must focus all of our attention on the mythical, excuse me, miss, but the mythical war on Christmas. It's just sad. And then for a supposed, and you work for them, Bob, a supposed journalistic endeavor like CNN to have someone that works for Beck interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just amazing. And, of course, yesterday, MSNBC fired Bashir, and they wonder why people are going to the Internet to get their information, because broadcast journalism, cable, print, is just about all propaganda.
Oh, I don't think it even rises. I mean, there are elements of propaganda that have a little bit of self-respect. This is just pure profit-driven entertainment.
Yeah, but who's going to watch?
Well, I mean, maybe, I mean, what, just really, from a, who's going to watch, Kevin? The Beckerheads fans are going to watch.
Yep.
And, well, and just, you know, just from a journalistic inquiry standpoint, let's ask. I mean, anybody answer. This is, what news can the Beckerhead bring to that discussion?
None.
Zero.
Period.
The only thing he can do, and this is in recent memory, the only thing he can do is complain that the Catholic school that he sends his Mormon daughter to taught his daughter to think that her father hated gay people. He was moaning about that on the airwaves the other day.
Well,
not joking,
isn't it?
Well,
so you took one for the team, huh?
No, I just read the headline.
Oh.
I cheated.
I choose not to watch television. I mean, everything I want to find, I can find over the Internet. I can do my own research. I can find out all the information. I can, you know, learn the truth for myself instead of depending on other people to tell me what it is.
My television at home only comes on when Dallas is playing football.
Is that only to see them lose?
Hey.
Oh, sorry.
That's the Browns. Come on now.
Oh, man.
The Houston football coach got fired today.
Yeah, I saw that.
Ooh.
Oh, God.
They were pretty pathetic last night.
I repeat, will the Earth split in two if he does get fired?
No, he already got fired.
Well, you know, big deal.
But, so the larger, you know, the larger question, though, if we go back to the Beckerhead thing tonight, for instance, Jack in Shreveport, isn't Beck pimping a book? Oh, he probably is. He puts that purple crayon between his toes and just goes to town. Sees all those lovely things when the Thorazine kicks in. But, you know, it's what I was saying the other night. This has nothing to do with journalism. It has nothing to do with journalism outfit or an organization committing acts of journalism. This is, if there's ever been a moment that was just the perfect thumbnail of the things that I say about the for-profit media, the idea that it is not designed to deliver news, programming, or information to people who want it, but rather to deliver unwitting, unsuspecting people into the tender mercies of advertisers. Well, this is it.
You know, it's kind of sad, too, because back in the day when CNN started, it was actually somewhat respectable. But as more and more has just become what the three letters stand for, which is Corporate News Network. And this is just, I don't know, that sounds like the death nail there. When you're interviewing Glenn Beck.
Well, remember, they gave him his start in TV, though. over at Headline News. He came on right after who's that hateful woman that wants to eat everybody she convicts? Nancy Grace. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Bob, I thought she was your girlfriend.
It's Jim and his friend Snark.
Listen to you. I mean, aren't we nice tonight? By the way, I just want to tell you, I think somebody's giving a party over at Bell Watling's because this idiot just walked past my house and he was wearing a Santa Claus suit with an umbrella, one of those plastic umbrellas. And I have a two-way intercom, so this is what I hit him with.
Did he turn and look, Jim?
That's it.
Here you go, baby. Here you go.
All right, Santa. Go back to the North Pole. Go on. Go on, get out of here. We don't need you. Carry on. That's a Palm Beach Santa. He's in his Bermuda shorts and has a tattoo on his derriere, so he bends over and gives you a Christmas cheer.
Well, Jim, let me ask you the question that I posed, and it was not necessarily rhetorical earlier. With that maximum cap being raised by $190,000 on government contractors up to $948,000 or $952,000, how many million dollar civil servants are there?
None.
Okay, I mean, and I'm not being a smartass. It really is zero.
$1 million civil.
No, I mean, you know, they basically take civil service to be what they are. And, right. You know, that's it. Basically, you know, it's, I wish I'd made that much, that amount of money. And I can tell you one thing about civil service retirement. Back in 1983, when they switched over from the CSRS, or the Civil Service Retirement System, to FERS, that really threw a monkey into the works, or a shoe into the machinery. And that was under, of course, you know, our Brill Cream friend, and I never have quite, you know, forgotten that, but nonetheless, it's called FERS, or Federal Employee Retirement System, in which you have, you know, certain funds into which you contribute, and as long as the stock market's going pretty good, well, good luck.
But if it goes in the tank, you follow it?
Huh?
But if the stock market goes into the tank, you follow it?
No, I just go to the cupboard and get some scotch out.
Well, but I mean, speaking, you said...
That's the tank you're talking about. That's the tank anybody would go into when it goes down like that, because, I mean, you can see your retirement just...
Well, I've heard St. Ronnie of Raygun referred to in a lot of different ways. Never before, Jim, as our Brill Cream friend.
Brill Cream, my God, I thought people stopped using that stuff back in the 50s.
A little dab will do you.
Exactly.
You a little dab.
So basically, you got thrown into the same thing as a 401k?
That's basically it, and a little dab won't do you.
Oh, my God.
No, I mean, it was just really the beginning when they started with things called KEOs, and all this kinds of stuff, the 401Ks, and then it transitioned back in 83 from people who were oncoming into federal service to this FERS. For a while there, you could either select one or the other, and then it was made mandatory for those people coming in after 84 that you enroll into the new FERS system, which was basically designed to throw all your retirement into the stock market and basically put you at the market of the free market economy, which I don't think was really good, to tell you the truth.
It's not a free market economy. It's just basically throwing your retirement in there for the millionaires and billionaires to skim as much of it as they can and steal it whenever things go bad. And they do steal it, because when things go bad, they make a hell of a lot of money on the way down and on the way back up.
Yeah, well, that's
yours,
the thing. That,
they're taking it.
Yeah, the market cats... They're kind of like the house in Vegas. They win whether you win or you lose.
That's right.
By the way, a note going back to the whole idea of Beck at CNN and at Headline News. Dr. John just dropped a note, and he writes in all caps, yes, we should never forget that moment. I was working at CNN.com when the news of Beck's hire was announced. There was a collective gasp down in what we called the cave. And it does. I would speculate that gasp represented a certain sense of shame, maybe outrage. And I got there, I mean, and this is just a little bit of personal history. I've still got a junior high notebook where one of my friends said, I expect to see you working for Ted Turner in the next 8 years. It wasn't quite, it was a little bit more than 8 years, but not by much. And we had a lot of pride in what we were doing because the rest of the world was looking down its nose at us.
Well, you know, Bob, let me just ask you this. I mean, CNN has always been pretty respectful, but they really got their start. I mean, at first they were intermittent, but I think the watershed date for CNN was when that little girl fell in that well in Texas.
That was precisely the moment, Jim. Little Jessica down the well in Midland, Texas.
Right, and that's when it went 24 hours, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I mean, that was basically the watershed date for.
Yeah, because CNN was the only outfit that was capable of pulling that off. And suddenly, Ted Turner's crazy vision for an all-news network suddenly had relevance.
Well, I would say it was that and the first Gulf War.
Yeah, but even this the Jessica down the well thing, Jason, enabled that. And I mean, I remember when it was the real time aspect of it when they finally delivered her up from the well. And my God, she had a hell of an existence afterwards.
Oh, thank God they were able to.
Yeah. But when they delivered her up out of that well, the next day, Ed Turner, who was the managing editor of the whole CNN system, not Ted, but Ed, different guy altogether, sent around this memo that I used to have and lost in a move somewhere along the way, that said, you do not realize it now, but you were present at a turning point in the history of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And sent out congratulations to everybody who had done anything whatsoever to expand that coverage. And it really was. The other thing though is that beyond being a watershed moment as you describe it, Jim, it was also a sort of a glimpse into that element of so-called journalism that we all would pretty much disdain.
Well, I can certainly agree with you to a certain point, but over the years, I think its quality of reportage has been seriously degraded, and of course, I mean, you can't watch CNN now with any continuity unless it's a special thing without somebody. We will come back to you as soon as we give you this moment. And it's really kind of irritating, actually.
Oh, very, very much so. And, I mean, there were a lot of moments. Bernie Shaw's credibility went to hell during the first Gulf War when he jumped under the table and wet himself.
I don't remember that. I remember Pete Williams when he was the voice of Desert Storm. Remember Pete?
Oh, yeah. Bernie Shaw with the opening attack or whatever it was, who literally was quivering in fear underneath a table, meanwhile in Jerusalem, and what was his name? Richard? He was a big, burly kind of Charles Caralty sort of guy. Was standing bareheaded, no vest, no helmet, on top of a building in Jerusalem. You could hear the sirens going off because Saddam was launching his scuds. And somebody said, Richard, put your armor on. We don't want you. And it was back at CNN headquarters. And we don't want you to get hurt. And just with all the aplomb of somebody who had maybe been through the Blitz, he said, well, those are unguided missiles. And if one of them finds me, I guess that means that it's time for me to go. I'll stay here the way I am, thanks. Meanwhile, Bernie Shaw was wetting himself under a table in Baghdad.
Well, you know, those guys...
But you know what? That's all just sickening to me, though. I mean, all that is war profiteering of the media, and it's not even journalism.
Oh, it was war porn.
Yeah, if you wanted journalism, go down there and find out why this is happening. Who did what? Well, talk about George Bush, the first George Bush, and the fact that he ignored Saddam Hussein asking if we had any interest in whether or not he invaded Kuwait.
Oh, Jason, he didn't ignore it.
That's we said no, we don't give a fuck. Go ahead and do it. And then he went ahead and did it, and what did we do?
Yeah, that was my point. He didn't ignore it. That's April Glaspie.
But that's journalism. Standing there and letting missiles land on the ground around you, you know, that's not reporting news. That's not informing the public. That's disgusting.
But by the same token, it was all...
Wait a minute, gentlemen. Wait a minute. You know, remember Edward R. Murrow and the broadcast he did from London?
Yeah, during the Blitz. This is London.
During the Blitz. I mean, you know, people were interested in that, and it was a great thing for people to realize exactly what the British were undergoing. That they were being bombed like hell by the Luftwaffe. And Edward R. Murrow...
Well, that's true, but when you look at our illegal wars in the Gulf, that's no comparison.
Yes, it is a comparison. I'm not through, sir. When our own ambassador, Mr. Kennedy, left Prince's Gate and went out to the old Barbara Hutton place because he was too scared to remain as our ambassador. But Edward R. Murrow did some things. This is London. And I can never forget my parents, you know, and their impressions of what they gave me and what I was later to see with Edward R. Murrow smoking a cigarette, giving out incredibly good reportage. We'll see it now.
Okay, well, that was good. What I'm talking about is what we had in the later years, the more recent years, that is not.
Well, that show business stuff that we saw in recent years is what it amounts to.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not talking about your Edward R. Murrow stories.
No, the whole
that was actually journalism, but these days it's not, because you're not getting the real story of what really happened.
But the whole run up to Bush War One was nothing but a PR exercise. You know, you referenced a few minutes ago, Jason. You referenced the April Glaspie memo. We didn't say we don't. We said. The United States takes no position on Arab versus Arab conflicts.
Yeah.
And that was straight from the White House. And so Saddam Hussein thought he had the green light to do what he needed. Because all this horizontal drilling with hydrofracking that we are concerned about that's happening in the United States now, well, the Kuwaitis were doing exactly that into the reserves of the Iraqis, and that was the casus belli that Saddam Hussein was upset about. Now, on the one hand, you had the Kuwaitis, who were a bunch of religious freak fundamentalists, and you had Saddam Hussein, who was actually running, although dictatorially, the most open secular society in the Arab world. Now, these are just facts. You know, women went to work. They didn't have to walk around with the headgear. They had freedom to be scientists, doctors, merchants, what have you. And that was part of why the Reagan administration supported them against the Iranians, because they were a relatively open society. But the run up to that whole war was nothing but propaganda. Now, going back to Edward R. Murrow, there was brilliance in what he did. But let us also understand that during the time of the Blitz, that was also used for propaganda purposes to whip the United States into a war frenzy.
War effort. Bob, that's what was happening at the time, though.
Well, my God, would you have preferred Hitler to have taken Great Britain? Because I can tell you one thing right now.
No.
He damn near executed Operation Sea Lion.
But well, you know what I would prefer is that
sir, I'm talking, please.
Jim. Everybody gets a chance. Don't be cranky.
All right, go ahead. I'll just respond.
Simply, the only reason that thing did not go off was because Hitler's ambitions were to the east, and he always had this greatest respect for the British. So he said, because they were the same part of the Nordic, whatever, and you know, he basically wanted the British to you know, acquiesce, which they didn't. And when, of course, Hitler made out his peace overtures to the British, they were refused, and Hitler was very upset. And I do believe after the first bombs were dropped on London, which were dropped by mistake by Luftwaffe pilots who got off course, that's when it really got nasty. And that's when Berlin the next night was bombed. And Hitler gave this tremendous broadcast from the Sports Palace in Berlin and said, if they drop 10,000 kilograms on us, we will obliterate their cities. Josiah, as he ended his speech. And he was saying, they're wondering, you know, when he comes, when will he come? He said, you know, don't worry, I'm coming. But fortunately for us and everybody else, he turned on the East.
Right, Operation Barbarossa, right?
And that was to prove his undoing right there, because that was a country that could not be taken, because those people, those Russians, God bless them, were able to at tremendous losses.
But that,
Jim,
that does not change the fact that it was very much, because there was you have to agree there was a strong isolationist element. It was generally concentrated inside the Republican Party in the United States. People like Lindbergh and others. There was a strong isolationist element, and the FDR administration badly needed. Or wanted, well, I don't even think that's appropriate, but they were not displeased to have this kind of propagandistic reportage coming from London.
I can tell you this, Bob, the thing that brought us out of the Depression, in spite of all the programs of Roosevelt, in spite of all the ABC agencies and stuff like that, the Depression was still lagging on. And the thing that brought this country out of the Depression was our rearmament and our entry into the Second World War. And that's, you can't argue with that.
Actually, you can, Jim.
Yeah,
by 1937, the economy had begun to rebound, but because of people like Henry Morgenthau doing the same thing that the Republicans have done in the last 5 years, hollering deficit, 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 inflation, 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 the gains that were made toward an economic recovery were reversed when FDR took Morgenthau's advice and initiated austerity programs that plummeted the country right back into the bowels of depression.
And then again, the only thing that could pull us from it would be the rearming of this country, defense industries and things of that nature against Nazis.
Jason, Kathy.
I want to go back to one second.
No, wait. Jason, please wait. Kathy wanted to get something in.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I'm sorry. I thought we were coming back out of it before we entered the war.
We were trying to, but basically
because
we had put our
changed. I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize. Please don't apologize. I mean, that's just the way this works. I mean, you'll
I thought there was a change in that Morgan saw theory, whatever. I thought they changed that back. I could be totally wrong. Because I thought that Roosevelt changed his mind about that.
Roosevelt would never change his mind about anything, because he was basically intent, number one, on assisting Great Britain under the table with Lend-Lease, and he knew that this country would have to be involved in this. You would have Adolf Hitler and his minions, literally, and they took most of Europe, they took all of Europe, and damn near a third of Russia, or the third of the European part of Russia. So, I mean, you know, no. I mean, Roosevelt always, basically, I think, his background as Secretary of the Navy, his interest in our defense posture, realized that this country would have to go into it. And they realized that the Japanese, because of the embargo, they would have to do something. And we knew what the Japanese naval code was. We knew what the diplomatic code was. As a matter of fact, Roosevelt knew what the Japanese code, when it was transmitted from Tokyo, he knew it before the Japanese embassy got it.
JM-25, right? The code.
But the U.S. government did not know about. They knew something was up. They did not know the specifics of Pearl Harbor, and this is an appropriate conversation given what tomorrow's date is. But now I want to go back to Jason, please. Yo, Jason.
Well, yeah, I'm here. I had to backtrack quite a little bit there and go back into reporting and back into the bombing of Great Britain. You do realize that if the capitalist institutions that were operating in Great Britain and exchanging with Germany before the beginning of the Second World War hadn't done so and continued to do so even during the Second World War, that the German Luftwaffe never would have been able to fly over to Britain and bomb them because of the fuel additives that they sold them and continued to sell them, so that their air fuel would give them good enough fuel mileage to make it to Britain to bomb them.
But Jason, let me tell you this. One of the reasons that the Luftwaffe had many problems is because their gasoline was not of the higher quality as the British gasoline was.
And the
well, it
British
was colder. It was colder.
They sold them the additives to get there.
But still,
I always find somebody is crooked like that. You're right.
But still, the gasoline, the octane rating used by the Luftwaffe was not equivalent to that of the RAF.
No, because it was coal-derived fuel, was it not, Jim?
Part of that, and they knew that you know that Germany had to rely upon sources like in Romania and other satellite states, because Germany basically didn't have the quality gasoline. And one of the big places that the British were able to obtain that octane for their airplanes came from us.
Yeah. Whereas the Germans were having to get theirs from, what was it, Ploiesti?
Ploiesti, Romania.
There was actually a British company that sold them the additives.
Well, I don't doubt that, because if you look to recent news accounts, for instance, the UK was somewhat embarrassed in the last few months to find out that a UK company had been shipping components of chemical weapons to the Syrian government. Even though they weren't supposed to, but remember, it's all about business. For God's sakes, we were talking earlier about Richard B. Dick big time before he dicks you five deferments, Cheney. This is a guy who was running a company that was doing business with Iran when nobody was allowed to do business with Iran. Business trumps all.
If they're connected, you're right, Bob. They can get away with almost anything.
Yeah, IBM was engaged in arming the Germans. Ford was engaged with the Germans. Of course, Brown Brothers Harriman, the Bush family, were just absolutely up to their hips.
Old Prescott.
With good old Fritz Thyssen.
Well, you know, IBM provided the Third Reich with one of its first automated systems by which they could keep up with a lot of the stuff they were doing, which wasn't really very humane, because that's one thing that enabled them to keep very good records.
Was it humane? Actually, they provided them with the damn punch cards so that they could keep track of the railroad cars that were carrying the victims of the Holocaust.
Well, that's what I was trying to say.
Not very humane is a little bit of an understatement.
Yeah, that's
Excuse
brutal.
Me. May I chime in a little bit?
Absolutely. Thomas, please.
Yeah, as far as what Kathy said, it was exactly what I remembered. I did a quick Google of Roosevelt Institute. Basically, after disastrous 1937, where he cut back, cut spending and all that to get the deficit, Roosevelt in 1938 went to Congress and asked him to increase spending. And start turning stuff around.
But it is appropriate that we have this conversation, I think, given that tomorrow is December the 7th.
Yeah.
And in fact, I had an email. It's very easy to look at December 7th and remember only the sneak attack on Pearl Harbor. But I had a note from Tim from L.A. And he said, I know December 7th is tomorrow, but it is the horn, and you're not on tomorrow. With that said, this day is for Japanese Americans. This day is our year of infamy. This the Roosevelt speech, Monday, December the 8th, to a joint session of Congress, was not only the prelude to going to war in the Pacific, but managed to destroy the familial fabric of the Japanese and Japanese Americans. Though the FBI proved that rumors of espionage by Japanese and Japanese Americans on the island of Hawaii to be false, it may be because many of the laborers were Japanese, and arresting them would have destroyed the economy. On the mainland, though, the Japanese and Japanese Americans were treated differently. Signs like "Japs keep moving," and he sent me photographs. "This is a white man's neighborhood," or the "Liberty Cafe, no Japs served here."
Well, yes, very true, Bob. And, you know, the Japanese definitely were mistreated when they were interned and things of that nature. There's no question about that. That was entirely wrong. And one of our Medal of Honor winners, the senator who's passed on,
Daniel Inouye,
right, mm-hmm. fought
brilliantly, well. Valiantly in the Italian campaign, was it not?
Yep.
5077. He lost his arm in that particular thing, I believe. And a lot of Japanese fought with great distinct.
There's a good book that can be found on that Japanese combat unit and how they were recruited. I've talked to Bob about when they brought some, it was pretty funny, typical young men. They brought fellas from Hawaii, fellas out from the mainland. And those two groups of guys at first had to verbally battle it out. The guys from the States called the other guys Buddha heads. It's a great book. It's a great study of the whole putting together of that that combat team.
And, you know, a lot of Japanese businesses, particularly on the West Coast, particularly when, you know, the impact of this thing occurred, these people lost not only their livelihood, but also their freedom.
And somebody had to go in and steal. If there's something to be stolen, you'll find somebody
to
steal.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, there was a vacuum there, and these people took the Japanese businesses over. And, you know, even the case with Tokyo Rose, Ivan Toguri. I mean, you know, that was a sad case with her, because basically she had visited her relatives in Japan, was trying to get back. Then Pearl Harbor happened, and then, of course, she spoke English. She had no place to go, no place to live, and was given a job as an announcer for the Japanese government, but was later, and many years later, she was finally pardoned by President Ford.
And she was basically press ganged.
Well, yeah, I mean, and but you didn't tell no to those people, to the Japanese kempeitai. You didn't want them knocking at your door, plus the woman had no ration card or anything. I mean, it was her prime objective was to get back to the United States. She was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, of course, now Tokyo Rose, there were many Tokyo Roses. I mean, they had many women who would broadcast and play all this stuff. As a matter of fact, my uncle, who was in the Pacific, I used to love Tokyo Rose. She was one of the, they listened to her more than they did the American broadcast because, you know, she was just a hoot.
And the music was better.
Yeah, it was good, real good. I mean, she was quite expert at what she did, or they were, that series of female broadcasters and things of that nature from Tokyo. I mean, let's face it, the Axis really knew very well, almost much better than we did.
Well, okay, let me throw out a question for consideration. This is purely speculative, of course. And before I do, just a gentle reminder. Many thanks going out, like I said previously, to Robert, who pushed us up to $170 this evening. We've only got $30 to go to match Max's kind challenge for the end of this week. PayPal button, headonradionetwork.com. That's what keeps all of this going. But I wanted to put out a question, generally speaking. If we consider and all of this happens after the Second World War, the rise of what Eisenhower warned us about in the form of the military-industrial congressional complex. Of course, he had to take the word congressional out. But we had when we were arguably caught flat-footed with the outbreak of the Second World War. But we had a lot of idled factories.
Yeah, we did.
We could ramp up production, ramp with government spending. Plants that made cars could make tanks. Plants that had made locomotives could make airplanes. And then there was the entire infrastructure of the military, which had enough structure about it to have quartermaster corps and signal corps and all the various elements of a military or a navy or the Marine Corps. When you look at the way that we went and fought the disastrous war in Iraq, and just as an example, we contracted out. And anybody who's ever had any passion, whether you were on the family back home stateside end or you were actually stationed somewhere, everybody knows about, APO, the military mail system, right?
Army post office.
Right. Well, they did we have to understand the Iraq War as a disastrous experiment in the privatization of military functions. Because they even privatized, everybody knows about the $29 Halliburger, but they even privatized the delivery of the mail so that soldiers didn't get their correspondence because these private contractors owed no oath. They didn't have to salute anybody. If they didn't want to go into a war zone with 50 bags of mail, they, by God, did not go. And I guess my hypothetical question is, can you imagine what would have happened to the United States, flat-footed as it was, if it had tried to go into the Second World War with a privatized military support apparatus?
Well, that would have been disastrous. Well. Absolutely. Absolutely. Disastrous. I mean, it was wrong for these contractors to have just robbed from the government the way they did. They stole and stole and stole, worse than any bandit you can imagine.
And even in the Second World War, there was profiteering. I'm sorry, Bill, you were going to say something?
Well, where Truman first started making his name was working with this investigational committee where the money was going in the war. And Truman, who, of course, as we know, loved Republicans, he made some kind remarks about some of the guys on the committee that were Republicans his contention was these guys put some of their own social class in jail. And for Truman to say something as decent like that about a Republican shocks me to this day, but it was true.
Yeah. And now, secondarily, I mentioned the fact that we had plants that were idled and factories that were empty because of the Depression. If the United States ever came to it, and Duncan, you've worked on, you've worked in industrial settings, as an electrician. Jason, I assume that you have, too.
I worked for Bechtel for a while.
Well, there you go. can you... what happens if something... And maybe it'll never happen again, a conflagration such as was the Second World War. But what would the United States do to try to ramp up to a war footing if we absolutely, absolutely had to do it on almost an overnight basis, as we did at the beginning of the Second World War? Because the plants have literally been shipped to China. The silicon furnace, where my father labored for so many years. He wept one day before he died. He said, I want to go out and see the plant. And we went out, and we drove out to see the plant, and there was no plant there. It was just a vast concrete expanse. And where his silicon furnace had stood, which he had strived with mightily over the decades, where it stood was just an empty space. That furnace had been packed up, bag and baggage, and shipped to China.
Mm-hmm.
And he wept.
You want a real simple answer, Bob?
Yeah, well, I'll take any answer you got, Jason.
Very, very simple answer is we'd be cut off like the Germans.
Yep.
In World War II.
These guys would sell out their mother, these
bastards. Well, the thing is that we don't have the production base anymore, just like you're hinting at. We'd be cut off like the Germans. We wouldn't have the means to manufacture our own stuff if we did not have the Allies to go with us. We'd be done.
Well, that's unfortunately when they start looking
for those plants. If where our manufacturing base has moved to was not allied with us, we'd be done.
Yeah.
And we could fight with what we've got for you know, as long as it lasted, and then that's it.
And bear,
you're looking at 5 to 10 years to rebuild it all.
If that.
It's destroyed now. When it was the Depression era, it was just standing empty. It had to be refurbished, but you didn't have to build everything from the ground up.
Actually, I may be a little bit too much gloom and doom. We got a lot of smart people in this country, though.
Well, we do.
We got
but
a lot of hardworking people and people willing to.
Where are they? Well, not in Congress.
Yeah, Kathy.
It's a big difference, not as in factories or anything, or possibly it could be, but when we went into Iraq, the country was never asked to stand up. Very few did. You know, they said, go shopping.
Yeah, go shopping, yeah.
Go to Disney World. Go on vacation.
Go shopping. Go, yeah. So all the sacrifices then were just those who served. We weren't asked to do anything.
And remember, something that's seldom mentioned, Kathy, is that while we were being fleeced on the military end of it with things like the $29 Halliburger, we were getting fleeced back home, too, because, and although many people didn't notice it. Remember, this is also at the same time that George the Dimmer was declaring that was declaring his ownership society. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he was saying we have the most home ownership of anybody else in the country, or of any time in the country's history, rather. And, you know, within a few short years, a bunch of those homeowners would be out on their asses with foreclosure signs sitting in their front yards.
Right.
But this is also the same time that, for instance, construction materials creep into little McMansion communities or McBurbs or whatever. Do you remember the scandal when we found out that that sheetrock was being made out of toxic coal ash, and people were mortgaged up to their knuckles, living in houses that were poisoning them with every breath that they breathed?
Yes, I do, because I believe that sheetrock was from China.
Yeah.
And my niece is still in that situation.
Well, what was happening...
They had to move out of their house.
Part of the reason that was happening...
I was going to say, corporations aren't being allowed to be personally responsible for their screw-ups.
Right.
Well,
my brother has a mortgage. He almost got foreclosed on twice now by a banking institution. And instead of them taking responsibility for giving them, you know, for loaning money to someone who probably couldn't afford it anyway, they just sold the loan off to another company. And that company, the way they make money is as soon as someone's late for a day, they hit them with all sorts of legal fees. And they're making money off of legal fees. So the original company that gave them the loan isn't being personally responsible for giving loan to someone that probably shouldn't have gotten one in the first place. And then we have all these bailouts. No corporation today is being held personally responsible for screwing up. And that's a big problem. And when they don't want to be held personally responsible, what do? They ship their business overseas to where they don't have as much oversight, where they don't have to pay their workers as much, where they don't have to deal with being personally responsible.
They're being rewarded. Look at the income inequality just since the recession.
Well, sure, one of the things I was getting at, Kathy, is that so you had the wallboard issue. I actually was made aware largely because of the fact that Boss Man Wayne is part of the building trades. I remember him explaining to me that the price of plywood, seemingly simple plywood, or particle board, had gone through the roof. You know why? Because simple elements of supply and demand dictated it. Because the world supply of plywood was going to the rebuilding of Iraq that we were paying for on the credit card that we got from the Chinese that Princess Dumbass of the Northwoods says are going to put us into slavery over Obamacare. Now,
you know, if that doesn't put, sick about,
If that doesn't put the straw in the liquor bottle, I don't know what does.
Well, you know, I think the Chinese really only own about 15% of our national debt.
That's true.
Which makes her even stupider than she sounds.
But see, it's a lot easier to holler about the Chinese than it is about the Dutch. And the Dutch own a shitload of our debt. And the English own a shitload of our debt.
I think 60% of it is owned by the American people.
Oh, yeah. Top 1%.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the 1% can... Well, look, they already tried to do it once already. The 1% can crash this economy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those are the ones, that's where they put their money, in the T-bills, because it's safe. They put a lot of money in them. And I think I have to go and look and find the figures again, but I do believe that somewhere around 60% of the national debt is owned by American citizens.
I know I had read somewhere that the Dutch hold a great deal of it, the UK holds a great... But see, that's the genius of debt, though, is that if a lot of people hold a good bit of it, then they're theoretically in the boat with you, and so nobody's going to want to drill a hole in the hull, right?
Exactly, which is why I say there's nothing wrong with our debt. I mean, you know, it'd be nice if it came down a little bit, but
mm-hmm.
You know, it's not really. It's not really hurting things that much. Because everybody that owns it isn't going to sell it, just as long as we don't default.
Right, and there are two prime examples. One, we were talking about Richard B. Dick big time before he dicks you five deferments. Cheney, you have no idea how hard it is to get all that out at one time.
Yeah.
and the decent human being's heart that he's walking around with.
Mm.
You know, he's the one who declared during the ascendancy of George the Dimmer that deficits don't matter. And then, and now we see that because the Obama administration's been forced into it, that wetting your pants over the deficit instead of wetting your pants over the fact that people have no jobs is a surefire to make sure that more people don't have any jobs. The jobs numbers today came out, and the Obama administration was tickled plum pink to note that unemployment in this country has fallen to 7%. Fallen from 7.3.
The whole play of the Republican Party is that when you're out of power, you yell and scream and cry and bitch about the deficit, but when you're in power, you run up the debt as high as you can. That's what they do, plain and simple.
Yeah, I was actually looking it up, and according to this one particular website, the biggest single owner of the national debt is the Social Security Trust Fund, or basically the retirement money for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's
well,
where now, the debt is.
Well,
wait a minute on that now, because that's our current Social Security payments, and the trust fund was invested in Treasury bills. It is not debt. It is, well, I mean, I guess...
Yeah, that goes...
Treasury owner of the national debt. I'm just reading this off a website when I looked it up.
Yeah.
And all I'm saying is that it's saying that the biggest single owner of national debt is the Social Security Trust Fund.
Well,
China is apparently the single largest foreign owner of the U.S. debt.
It's because they borrowed against it, right?
Well, the American dollar props up the Chinese yuan, because the valuation of the Chinese yuan is artificially maintained. Because even though they're operating on capitalist principles, it is still, to the extent of monetary policy, a command economy.
And it affects our trade deficit.
Let me throw a question out. How does the average Chinese human being, their whole lifestyle, whether, you know, including food, shelter, compare with what it was under Chiang Kai-shek or under Mao?
Some would say...
Under Mao? My God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or under Chiang. But I don't even know if
I don't think Chiang Kai-shek was any great feeling had any great feeling for anybody except for him and Madame Chang.
And her brother.
Far as Mao is concerned, my God in heaven, you had things going on over there you would not believe. I mean, remember his great leap forward in which they were putting blast furnaces in the backyards of people's homes, and the steel and the stuff that was coming out of that stuff wouldn't even support a cat, much less what it was intended to. It was just a falsehood.
Well, and I think you can't even all of that. You know, it all changes when Bill Clinton affords permanent most favored nation status.
Yeah.
To the People's Republic. And remember, that happens at a time when Prescott Bush Jr., George H.W.'s big brother, is the president of the United States China Chamber of Commerce. And that's where the seeds are planted of the current exodus of jobs and manufacturing out of the United States and into the People's Republic of China comes from. You've got the world's largest burgeoning middle class in China now. I mean, I guess there are still probably some hundreds of millions of people who are living the peasant life that maybe Pearl S. Buck wrote about in The Good Earth, but there's a whole lot more of them gravitating to the cities or hoping that the next generation will be able to live a middle class life because the current generation is working 12 hours a day with no sit-down breaks. And nets outside the dormitories to catch them when they commit suicide because they're working at the Foxconn plant.
Yeah, Foxconn. God almighty, that's a terrible thing.
But that, on the other hand, Bill, is not communism.
No.
That's capitalism running like a clock.
Running amok.
Because, you know, go read the econ pornography of Milton Friedman. And he'll tell you that the last thing, the thing that matters the very least in his nightmare vision of economic prosperity is the worker. F them, kill them, starve them, doesn't matter.
There's somebody to replace them.
Right.
Now, I caught the tail end of that working factories when I was a kid, you know, 16, 17, 59, 60, working in the garment center. You know, making sweaters and fixing the machines that made them.
I mean, I go back to that the remarks made to me, and I won't give names, but a remark made to me by a friend who is a scientist, who was actively involved in scientific investigation over the course of months upon months upon months, that led him to travel all over the People's Republic of China. There was almost no part of the People's Republic that he did not see. And he looked at me and he said, "Do you know the largest wild animal that I saw in my entire time there?" I said, "What? Maybe wild dog?" He said, "No, a sparrow." Because among other things, the country was entirely denuded of wildlife during the starvation years of Mao's great leap forward, what Jim was talking about a couple of minutes ago.
It was worse than basically the number of Chinese people who died almost surpassed those of or that time of Europe when Hitler was trying to selectively do things to people, and then because of his adventurism, his military adventurism, it was really bad.
You know something
even worse than Stalin almost.
Yeah, go, Larry.
About Friedman, when people asked him to make some comments about how to apply his theory, he said, I remember watching one day, he said, "Don't ask me to apply my theory. Don't ask me to advise people on how to, on what to do. I'm just a theoretician."
Yeah,
in other words, willing to sit there and do his theorizing and do his stuff on paper, but if he were to actually have to be there and implement the actual practical effects of his theorizing. He wouldn't want to take responsibility for it.
Right, because he was, because Larry, he was engaged in theorizing the maximum exploitation of working people. But he certainly didn't want to get his mitts dirty on their bloody bodies. And in a way, it's kind of that attitude that he manifested is kind of corollary to that old rhyme, going back to the rocket age, of the rocket goes up, who cares where it comes down? It's not my concern, says Wernher von Braun.
Well, interesting.
Well, I just knew how bad it was in China from reading, you know, during World War II and probably under Mao in the earliest days.
Well, what I think...
Know,
what
has come, you know. With
well,
all
Bill, my
work,
God,
you know.
I mean, look at what the Japanese were doing to China before, you know, the late 30s with the rape of Nanking and the bacterial warfare experiments that they were using. I think it was in something or whatever. I don't know what the code name was for. It was just horrible.
And, of course, Bill and I have pointed out in conversation also that the only reason you wind up with Pearl Harbor is because the Soviets put such a brutal ass-whipping on the Japanese in what was called the Northern Campaign.
Yeah, like
Normandy and such, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zhukov was the Russian commander.
You know, he cut his teeth on what he would later do to the Germans on the Japanese.
Yeah, sure did. Absolutely.
Well, the irony to me is the Japanese produce such great cars, but my God, they couldn't build an armored vehicle to save their ass.
Well, they couldn't. They also couldn't put a self-sealing fuel tank in the Zero.
Yep.
If they'd had self-sealing fuel tanks in the Zero, they would have. I mean, they were running circles around the F4F anyway, and God knows the Brewster Buffalo.
Yeah, I know. C4, yeah.
But all we had to do was armor up a vehicle with a great big whomping engine in it. And put self-sealing tanks in it, and, you know, the next thing you know, it's 1944, and it's the Marianas Turkey Shoot.
Which was the F-6F Hellcat.
Yes, it was. And my uncle was there in it, in one.
By the way, Bob, and I need to ask a question about this. I don't know anything about military or about war history. That's why I'm listening. But the Mariana Islands consistently votes with the U.S. in the... UN, and they consistently support the U.S. in everything. Why has that historically been the case?
Well, they're a protectorate.
They're territory, Larry.
Yeah, they're a protectorate.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're...
You ever heard of Guam?
Yes, Guam and American Samoa and...
Well, Samoa isn't part of the Marianas. Saipan and Guam are part of the Marianas.
Right.
And remember, it was the Marianas where, again, back in the dim and dark days of the reign of Bush the Dimmer and Count Dicula, that they went, and it's so much easier to say Count Dicula than that long litany, I got to tell you. And I owe eternal thanks to Jim for that.
Little Shrub and Big Dick. Sorry.
Oh, well, toaster for Larry.
Didn't we inherit the... Well, of course, we inherited the Marianas from Japan, but I think Japan inherited a lot of Pacific islands by going after Germany for a very short time in World War One.
Well, that... But what I was going to get to in a little bit more recent history, Bill, is remember that the American manufacturers insisted on an exemption from essential human rights laws for the Marianas Protectorate. So that people so look up Marianas prostitution,
yeah, I remember,
and Tom DeLay, if I recall correctly.
I want to throw one thing. Can we step into present day for just a minute?
Sure.
And look at this. What's going on with China and Japan and South Korea, and they're trying to start all this conflict over again. And the Chinese, Beijing's trying to break alliances with the U.S., with some of the other islands over there. What the heck's going on? Is anybody up to date on this? Because I was watching Al Jazeera America today.
That one island they're bitching about Japanese and Americans flying over?
Yeah, but it's getting even deeper, though. I was watching Al Jazeera America this morning, and I caught a little bit of it, and I was like, what the hell is really going on? Because Beijing was pushing some governments, and I don't even know, it seemed like some kind of sort of obscure nation or whatever to push for rights in the Pacific too.
Well, a lot of these islands I never even freaking heard of, and anything in the past, the ones that are, they're making a fuss about now, though. We own this. No, we do. No, we do. Bunch of children.
Well, I know I got to spend 3 months on the rock.
Which one? The Corridor or the one out
Guam.
For me?
Well, I guess this is
Anderson
still developed.
Anderson Air Force Base Guam working on B-52s.
Yeah. Yep.
At the time, was the world's largest alert pad.
Well, B-52, that's the workhorse of the U.S. Air Force.
Oh, yeah.
We had 16 B-52Ds uploaded with 4 20-megaton bombs apiece. Every time we went on alert, I about crapped my pants wondering whether they were going to roll.
What's the old thing? You're down on your knees under your desk, and what do you do at that point?
Kiss your ass goodbye.
Well, if you know what a cartridge starter is, and the klaxon horn goes off, and the crews get in those B-52s, and they start firing off those cartridge starters, and then you got 16 B-52s running, you're just, if one starts taxiing, it's just like, that's it. It's time to kiss your ass goodbye.
Yeah, because you know one of those missiles or bombs or whatever is coming right there where they left.
Well, that was our defense triad then. Would that have that under, you know, the strategic attack was to keep bombers in the air 24/7. And that was just part of it then. And we're so fortunate that we did not have a Dr. Strangelove situation or a fail-safe situation, really.
You ever seen that movie, By Dawn's Early Light?
Oh, yeah, sure have. With, what's her name? Real pretty girl. Powers Booth was one pilot.
Powers Booth, yeah.
Yeah. And,
that was a good one.
Yeah,
Dunk, you seen cool. that?
Oh, yeah.
Being a B-52 worker and all? Yeah, that was a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Let me talk.
But now all that's been replaced, you know, gentlemen. I mean, we have other more deadly things that are prowling the seas, and you know what we're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, mostly submarines, yeah.
And
sea wolves.
And sea wolves, or, you know, whichever class you want to call it, because you've got boomers, and you've got attack subs, Los Angeles class, and Ohio class, and stuff like that. But, I mean, one submarine, if it doesn't get, if it gets a misfired EAM, well, they have enough destructive power on our missile boats to basically bring the world to an end.
Torch the planet.
Yeah, well, basically, that actually goes back to the question you asked earlier, Bob, is what happens if we have to rebuild for another war? We'll never have to.
Nope.
No, we'll just cook the planet.
Exactly.
But back to the larger question of what is going on in that space between China and Japan, this is muscle flexing, okay?
Yep.
And again, everything isn't necessarily history, but history informs everything. You remember right after he became president, when George the Dimmer, the Chinese shot down our spy plane.
Yeah.
And George the Dimmer said, send our people back because I apologize, and if you don't, I'll apologize again. Yeah, you know, he's real tough. He's real, real tough if he was shoving around somebody that he knew couldn't fight back.
You know, guys like that in my neighborhood, yes.
He was real good at butchering innocent Iraqis. He was really good at bombing what Rumsfeld complained were mud huts in Afghanistan. But I tell you, but he went eye to eye with the People's Republic of China and soiled himself. I mean, there's one of the funniest moments out of the Bush administration is that video clip of him trying to leave the room during one of those summits. Yeah, when he tries to open the closet to get away.
Yeah. And you know what they say about China, too, as far as their military goes and as far as the available people they have? They could march people two by two into the ocean, back to back, from now until kingdom come, and they would never run out of people.
There you go.
Yeah. And so this is, you know, the Chinese are on the way, are engaging in building what will eventually be the largest navy in the world. The first time they've done that since the 14th century.
Yeah.
And the purpose of that is to, among other things, be able to defend and assert the rights of hydrocarbon exploitation.
We're talking about power projection, too.
Well, it absolutely is, but the reason they're projecting the power isn't because they're looking to overrun Japan or Korea. It is because on a warming planet, one of their top goals, because they're already working at it, is to go and drill in the Arctic, because they claim that no one owns the Arctic.
Well, you know, that's the problem between the Russian Federation and the Chinese nation, as we talked about earlier before, because Chinese students are taught and have been taught for years that a majority of their country goes up into what is claimed by the Russian Federation.
Right.
And, you know, they've had a lot of set twos ever since 1969 on the Amur River. Yeah. And when they basically had their loss of their honeymoon with communism, and that, or Soviet revisionism is what they called it. And you heard from Beijing, names being called at Moscow, called revisionist running dogs. Because, you know, the Russians, you know, had that, you know, basically were pursuing one type of communism, and they were pursuing a different kind of what they considered pure communism, I guess. I mean, this is what, I guess, the Russians were trying to transition, at least to give their people a little bit of washing machines and things of that nature for the civilian population. And of course, they were trying to do the military too, and they couldn't. They collapsed. Democratic centralism just didn't work, and their planned economy under Gosh's plan was just a chimera. But I mean, Chinese and Russians, I will tell you something, if there's a conflict to come, I do believe it will be between those two nations in that particular area of the world. And there's a great book that I mentioned it before, Bob, Harrison Falls Theory, War Between Russia and China.
Well, the other side of that coin, Jim, is that go ahead, Jason.
They're both nuclear armed nations, though. I can't see it. It's not gonna be allowed to happen. Something's gonna have to come in between there, because if you talk about an all out war between Russia and China, it's gonna go nuclear. Period. Well, so is that another Cold War? Are we gonna end up in a three way Cold War with Russia, China, and?
That was recognized by Chairman Mao, who said, if we lose X number of millions, so what? We got X number of millions to spare.
But it doesn't matter. In the end of a nuclear war, nobody is alive.
Well, that was just the attitude that these people have. It's fatuous and it's stupid. And
there are people to this day who are neither Russian nor Chinese, who in fact consider themselves to be patriotic Americans, who don't necessarily hold to that theory, Jason. They think that there is such a thing as a winnable nuclear war, and that's terrifying. But the other, like I was saying a minute ago, the other side of that coin is that while it's power projection, as Jim describes, it's also a sort. It's not necessarily as hard a power projection as we might imagine, because if you consider an ice-free Arctic, well, it's not necessarily going to be a conflict between Russia and China as much as it is, they're far more interested in drilling in areas that Canada considers to be sovereign.
Well, if there's an ice-free Arctic, Bob, you're going to have parts of Siberia and the Taiga that's going to be open too.
Right, but given the choice between the two, everything I've read says that they're more interested in drilling where the parts that had formerly been frozen Canada that will now simply be open ocean. But this is, you know, this is part of a projection of power that's worldwide. You know, the Chinese are a massive trading partner with Brazil. They're going in and openly competing and winning in a sort of, and again, with the passing of Nelson Mandela, I think this is an appropriate discussion. There's a sort of Chinese corporate capitalist recolonization of Africa going on. I mean, we hear a lot about Chevron and ExxonMobil and so forth, but the Chinese are being very, very successful in the numerous countries of Africa.
They're big in Sudan.
Yeah.
I mean, all over Africa. Africa is a huge source of wealth and natural resources that is yet to be exploited in many cases. And so naturally, you know, with nature abhorring a vacuum, they're going to go in there and they're going to take exactly what they can by any means possible.
And by the way, I just had a comment from Irish Dave. Very telling. I think he's hearkening back to something that Albert Einstein said. He said the primary weapon of World War IV will be the stone axe.
Six and stone.
Because I believe that.
Agree. If that, you know.
Yeah, because that it was Einstein, I think, who said, I do not know what weapons the Third World War will be fought with, but I know that World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones.
Well,
I've got a quick question for you, Jim. Something
sure,
that happened.
He was right, absolutely.
Something that happened during the Yom Kippur War. I woke to the news early, and this guy blurts out the fact that Strategic Air Command was on the alert. Jim, you know about that? I never heard it. They announced it.
Well, I do.
Never again.
You go ahead, sir.
Tell me, was I hallucinating, or did I actually hear that on the radio? Once and never again the rest of
you're talking about the October 73 war?
Yep, Yom Kippur war.
I was in Thailand. They woke us up at 4:30 in the morning to go on alert. Nixon put an all sack on worldwide alert.
You mean I actually
and I was that. I was in Thailand and we didn't have any nuclear bombs, but we sure had a lot of dumb bombs. But anyway, that day we went out on the flight line, and they said they were changing out the bomb racks on all the B-52s at Utapau for nukes, which didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because the nukes were in Guam, and they had
a numerous amount of
B-52s there.
Well, I was hallucinating the whole thing because I only heard it once. I said, "Oh, you better change."
Well, you know, even in a non-war situation, in 1983 with Abel Archer. Remember that? April, when we almost went to war, when NATO was doing Reforger, and under the codename of Abel Archer, and there was a problem with one of the Soviet missile detection systems, and because of one Soviet colonel who decided, no, let's just hold on here, it could have started in 83. With Abel Archer.
See,
and if you
I
want to read about Abel
that,
Archer, that's a scary thing.
When you wake up to a radio announcement of Strategic Air Command going on the alert, and you never hear it again, you figure, man, you better get a better brand or talk to a different dealer here quick. Because you're hearing things that ain't going on, you know. And
well,
I
Bill,
just,
you would be hearing those things if that happened.
Because they, you know how it is, Jim? They let things slip through one time. Whoops.
Now, you wouldn't
and
be
you
hearing
never heard
things.
It again
I
on
hate
network
to tell
TV
you,
broadcast.
Bobby, it would all be over in less than 30, 45 minutes, basically. And then you have, you know, like that movie, The Dawn's Early Light, people who wanted to go for the grand tour. I mean, it was really scary. But the scariest thing that ever happened to me was Abel Archer. And that was something else you would not believe, because every hand was on the trigger. And basically, it was one Soviet officer who helped bring that thing or bring it down to where, you know, we could realize that, you know, oh my God.
Look what which planet we almost roasted.
I mean, just a vacuum tube or a transistor or something like that. I mean, things were at that particular point so poised and so ready. And of course, you know, Reagan had been ranting about the evil empire and stuff like that. And not to go into all that, but we came to a very close call under Abel Archer with Reforger, our annual exercise with NATO.
Can I finish my story about that day?
Yes, please.
I mean, after we went to work, I mean, we had the weirdest weather event that afternoon. Just before evening, we had a sideways tornado over the flight line. And that brought out all the religious nuts because of the war thing. Everybody thought it was going to be, you know, it was the end of times, or what do you call it, Revelations?
Oh, here we go, yeah.
I mean,
great, getting up morning.
And then that night, we had the worst lightning storm I have ever been through in my life. We have these three-story concrete barracks, and the lightning bolts are hitting right between the barracks. And it just went on for a couple hours. And then the army base right next to us has all these the sapper pop flare things at the edge of the base, and they were going off, fireworks going, I mean, flares going off in the sky, these lightning bolts coming down. We thought it was the end of times. But all the stoners in the barracks, all they wanted to do was go out on the balcony and get stoned.
Oh, dude, look at the lightning.
Yeah, and watch some fireworks.
Those guys have
well,
a
you
idea,
know,
at least.
What better thing else could you do?
Right.
Because the electricity was out, too. I mean, we lost power. That's the only thing we could do.
I mean, it's the old Bohica thing, you know. Bend over and kiss your ass goodbye if something were happening, you know.
I'm
that's
just gratified that I didn't hallucinate a radio broadcast because, you know.
Well, you'll get a kick out of this. Irish Dave pointing out they had weather weapons back then, too. Also, so saith Alex Jones. You know, I can only do that a few times a night, otherwise
well,
it sounds
know, Bob,
like I gargle with razor blades.
There have been certain studies that have been conducted about using weather as a weapon.
Well, sure. I mean, Kurt Vonnegut's brother invented cloud seeding.
I mean, you know, there are all kinds of things that you know, they put special people into investigating, meteorologists and climatologists and stuff like that, to try to perhaps make certain weather conditions over an enemy, it would be to our advantage. I mean, that's real.
Well, if you can use something to kill somebody, some military mind has considered it. Remember, Churchill had 1,000 ideas a day, and 999 of them were absolutely certifiably insane.
Oh yeah, remember those big ice boats he wanted to
precisely
build?
Where I was going, Jim. He wanted to make ice. He wanted to make aircraft carriers out of icebergs.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, it was just really nuts. And I mean, I thought to myself, good heavens.
Yeah, I think that was when the second all was kicking in or something.
Well, I mean, you know, he basically stayed in bed till 11 o'clock in the morning, and basically probably got up with a tot of brandy and stuff like that. But he did have some bizarre things. There were, and that was only one of the few weapons that he was entertaining.
Well, he was responsible for the military plan that led to the death of my uncle, because he wanted a diversionary attack through the south of France to divert from the Normandy invasions.
Yeah, he was always possessed of that soft underbelly of Europe type thing, even in the First World War.
Oh, he was still pissed. He was still pissed off that Admiral What's-His-Face had screwed up his Gallipoli plan.
God, that was a horror show.
Hey, guys, it's time to roll out of here. I hate to say it, but we got to $70 of matching Max's 100, and we've stalled. So anybody out there that wants to help out with 10 bucks three times, 15 twice, 30 once, anything, when somebody puts up a kind challenge like that, I really hope to see it met. So just to make sure that that's out there. It's been a rousing good conversation, gang. Thanks to everybody in the Skype room. Thanks for jumping in the first time here, Myth. I hope you'll be back.
Oh, by the way, Bob, it's pelting.
I try to.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, it's. Wait, is it still rain, Jim?
It's pelting. I can hear it over there in a calm.
Oh God. Well,
it's the turn to sleet here in Northern Virginia.
Lovely, lovely.
Oh yeah, y'all are getting the storm that hit here.
Yeah, and it'll be time for me and Ferg to go empty buckets in the bedroom.
Yeah. Oh, God. It was 37 degrees here last night.
They say we might get snow here tonight.
So what you're saying is donate money so you can afford a new roof?
No. It's more like so we can afford some more damn buckets.
Jim, you're talking about snow in Louisiana.
Hey.
Beautiful weather here in South Florida.
Rub it in. Rub it in. That's okay. It'll all be underwater in 75 years.
Oh, my God. It sounds like...
Stop complaining.
It'll be less than 75 years. It's 20 or so.
Yeah, whatever of it doesn't sink, just fall into a sinkhole. Gang, it's been wonderful. Hey, Kathy, thanks for being here this evening. It's wonderful to have a woman's voice in amongst all these fellas.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
It was a real pleasure. Y'all have a great weekend.
You too.
You too.
Bye
you
now.
Okay.
Young lady, good night.
And there we go. Friday on the Front Porch comes to another close here for the 6th of December, 2013. Back on Monday, should be a regular broadcast week. Dr. Bill will be back as well. I'm looking forward to that. And thanks to everybody who makes this all happen. You, all of you, first and foremost, by participating in the conversation, sharing your ideas via email, tweet, Facebook, phone, semaphore, however you do it. Thank you. Thank you for supporting the program and keeping it going all these very long years. This is an ongoing experiment in community building that cannot happen without it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy moderating in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. And you know who's next. It's Rick Smith on the horn.